Hello and welcome to another episode of People I Want to Be Friends With me, Andy Shepherd. I think I'm going to continue to call these the isolation sessions because that right now is the world that I expect the majority of us are living in. Self-distancing, self-isolating. I hope you're all staying safe, staying healthy, staying at home right now. Hopefully this podcast will help get you through an hour of this self-isolation time. Thanks for all the lovely messages about last week's episode with Tom Phillips. What a guy, I'm sure you'll all agree. And who watched WrestleMania this weekend and heard the man himself calling those matches. WrestleMania, what did you make of it? Personally, loved it myself. I haven't been this excited for a WrestleMania in a long time. I think I was very curious to see the creative response from WWE. And hey, it makes me very proud to be able to work with a company like WWE who can turn these things around so quickly. The Boneyard match, oh my word, probably one of my favourite things I've ever seen. Thought it was executed very well. Also loved Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens, the Firefly Funhouse, loved that. Rhea Ripley, former NXT UK Women's Champion, with one of the matches of the weekend. All in all, it was great. 6 hours of my weekend, very well spent. Was pretty tired when I woke up on Monday, I won't lie to you. But hey, on to this week's conversation, and it's with a man that anyone who watches NXT UK will know very well, a former NXT UK Tag Team Champion in the form of Flash Morgan Webster. We talk about his beginnings in Bryn Mawr, Wales, and the man who influenced him. We talk about his takeover matches, both at Takeover Cardiff, winning the NXT UK Tag Team titles alongside Mark Andrews, and the ladder match at Takeover Blackpool 2. We talk about WrestleMania, his thoughts on that. We talk about UK Indies. Hey, we talk about a lot of stuff. So, without further ado, let's get into the conversation. Remember, if you like this chat with Flash Morgan Webster and you like my other podcasts, please do subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're on and leave a rating and review because it all helps the cause. So, without further ado, here is Flash Morgan Webster. Welcome. Thank you for joining me. I know your diary is very busy right now.
very, very busy.
So yes. Thanks for finding a gap in the diary.
Tiles on the ceiling.
Yeah. So how are you finding this? Because now what we're two, I've even lost count. We're 2 or 3 weeks into this isolation now. How are you dealing with, well, being at home so much?
To be fair, it's, you at first you're kind of like, you know, we get a little beat up when it comes to wrestling. You think to yourself, oh, a little bit of downtime, get yourself all good. And then you kind of realize, well, after about a couple of days, oh, this is pretty boring. I want to be there and I want to be wrestling, or I want to be out. Even as just as simple as going to the gym. Like, I spend 2 to 3 hours in the gym every day, and now that's come down to a home workout. So that's quite a nice escape sometimes when you're in the house. You'd be like, okay, now I'm going to walk to the gym, and then I'm going to do my gym session, and I'm going to walk back. But now it's like, okay, I'm going to go to the gym, which involves walking to the kitchen, or it involves walking to the dining room and doing my workout there. So yeah, that cabin fever hasn't set in yet, but I think it's on its way.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I've kind of realized is this last week, I'm so used to not being here. I'm so used to being somewhere else. You know, I'll be at home for, yeah, maybe a week or two. I'll be here, and then I'll be off doing something. Whether, even if that's just visiting my parents, or, you know, going away to see friends or something. I'm normally away somewhere. So to be here nonstop. Of course, you know, a lot of us, I think, including yourself, were supposed to be in the States this past week. Yeah. Supposed to have shows. I mean, you no doubt had other shows as well. We're so used to being away. So to be in one place, and again, it's that thing where it's when you're forced to be in one place, that's when it's a bit weird. I think if this is our own choice, like, yeah, I want to spend a month at home. It'll be kind of nice. But the fact that the options are being taken away, that's something that I'm starting to struggle with a little bit.
The only thing I can kind of like take a bit of solace in is, I don't know if I speak for all wrestlers, but being out is hard, and not being able to wrestle is hard because it's our passion. But what makes it even harder is knowing that other people can do it. It's like that fear of missing out. Like, that's really difficult. So kind of knowing that everything is stopped is a little bit easier,
yeah,
because you know then you're not missing out on stuff. But again, it's just that, it's that freedom. Of course, we were supposed to be in the States, and we were supposed to be in Florida, and that week would have been hectic, but it would have been really fun, and we would have been around all our mates as well. But again, I guess we're doing what's best for everybody else, and we're staying home and we're staying safe.
Let's talk about Florida, because shows just happened this past weekend. Did you watch WrestleMania? What did you think of it?
I did, yes, I did. So I know that me and you spoke about this. For some reason, my app on my LG TV's just decided not to work anymore.
Oh, LG TV, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know, exactly. But luckily for me, I got it loaded up on the laptop and stuff like that. So I did watch both nights of WrestleMania. I'll be honest with you, I know that a lot of people went in and they were negative before it even started. And I was somebody as well that I was trying to be positive, but I was still looking at it going, I don't know how this is going to come off. And I hope that this is enjoyable. And I sat there and I enjoyed everything from start to finish. It was some of it I don't think I'll ever forget.
No.
No.
I had a number of these conversations going into the weekend, and genuinely, and I know we work for the company, but genuinely, this was one of the WrestleManias that probably since I was a kid that I was most excited for, just because what WWE have done in the past few weeks, being able to turn around their creative, turn around their TV shows to make something watchable in this current climate, I thought was amazing. And you know, WrestleMania is always going to be, you know, they're always going to pull out all the stops of WrestleMania. And again, I thought in the current climate, wow, what a show. I mean, were there any matches that stood out for you as your favourites?
Well, I'll be lying if I didn't say it wasn't the Boneyard match.
Oh, I was like, mate.
I've been wanting American Badass for so long. And I can only imagine what it would have been like if they're in a stadium and that music would have hit and that he would have come out on the motorcycle. I can only imagine. But considering they couldn't do that, there was moments as well. You know, whenever you watch a Taker match, you have that thing of like, oh, he could lose or he might not lose. There was a moment while I was watching that AJ Styles match, I went, how perfect would it be if they decided this is the last thing they're doing with Undertaker? Mm. And when he got thrown into the grave, I thought to myself, this would be the most perfect way to write him off. It's really cinematic. It's, okay, he's done full circle. He's become badass again. And now he's being buried by somebody who they probably will consider will be somebody who will carry the company for the next 10 years. I thought this is perfect. Of course, that didn't happen. But again, even that had its WrestleMania moments of me thinking Taker's going to lose. So I definitely that. And the Firefly Funhouse, what the hell did we even watch?
I need to watch back the Firefly Funhouse, because it was, by that point, it was, what, the second night I'd stayed up until 3:30 in the morning. Yeah. And I think I was in a bit of a haze, and I've not had a chance to watch it back for a second time. At the time, I loved it. I think I'll love it even more when I'm not, you know, in that kind of mystical world of half asleep. But going back to that, the Boneyard match, I remember watching it and being like, I remember when I was a kid and, you know, you'd see a wrestler in a movie, like a mainstream movie. And I was always excited because obviously I love wrestlers. And they'd always given them a fight scene. And the fight scene was always super underwhelming. And you know, it'd be a wrestler that no one else knew was a wrestler, and they'd be doing clotheslines and stuff like that. And, you know, it never quite delivered. With the Boneyard match, it was like every rubbish wrestler fight scene from a movie was made up for. Because it was so cinematic. It was done so well. And it was a huge risk. Because that kind of concept, I think, if it wasn't executed as well as it had been, it could have really fallen on its face. Yeah. But it didn't. And that's a testament to me. I don't know the other names involved in it, but I know Jeremy Borash was involved in it. And I'm sure there's a huge team behind it. But it's just a testament to the talent that WWE have got right now. Not only in the ring, but also behind the cameras, man.
Yeah. I also think as well, like, you forget that, like, Taker hasn't really been a verbal character now for, what, 10 years? No. And the moment he, like, hits him and AJ's retreating, he's like, where are you going, Alan? Where are you going? Like,
yeah. Instantly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was the Undertaker that I grew up with. That was the, like, American Badass was my Undertaker. That's who I came in watching. So, like, it gave me that feeling of when I was a kid of when he would be beating the hell out of Vince McMahon or something, and he'd be saying, oh, what are you doing, Vince, or something like that. It added such another layer to the character, a layer that I didn't know that I missed until I saw that.
Another match. I mean, I think some of the matches, you know, you always want a crowd, and you're a worker. from what I've heard, you know, a crowd always helps you guys along. That's the case, yeah. And I think some of the matches, you know, again, in front of a crowd, they would have felt different. But there's a match that stood out to me, which I felt almost, if anything, it was almost probably better in front of the empty audience. And that was Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens. Because those guys are so good at trash talking. And in this environment, you could hear every word they were saying. And I was like, this is amazing. I didn't even register when there was no one there watching it, because you were just taken in, not only by the story they were telling, both physically and verbally. It was, oh yeah, that for me was a real standout.
It was the perfect placement on the show as well, because I think that we'd watched it, and of course we've had a few weeks now of no TV, no audience TV or whatever, and it's been some of it has been hard to watch or whatever because it has lacked that energy. And that match was the perfect placement, because when he jumped off the WrestleMania sign, first off, they had a great match before it became the notable occasion. But then when he jumped off the sign and they said the words, "What a WrestleMania moment," you were like, whoa, they are going all out here. They are determined to make this WrestleMania. And I think that if anyone was on the fence, that was the match that really dragged everyone into the shows.
Yeah, absolutely. Another match that stood out to me, and you know, I know everyone at NXT UK would have been watching this one very closely, was Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair. And that was, I think, bell to bell, one of the best matches of the entire weekend.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And it's proof that they've been saying it for a while that, like, Rhea is the future of this company. And I think you'll be hard-pressed to find any wrestler who's improved more than Rhea Ripley over the last 2 years. Like, you yourself were there when she walked into NXT UK, and she had something about her, but she was still, in much regards, a baby, really. You could kind of still see that she was learning. And to see who she's become now in the space of, like, 18 months, 2 years is absolutely incredible. Well, probably less than that. It's probably, like, what, 16 months or whatever? She's become an absolute force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and how does that make you feel as a member of the NXT UK roster to see someone like Rhea come in? And again, she, you know, she was a baby when she came in. And it was only, let's say it's 6 months. 6 months ago, she was on our roster. And now she's part of WrestleMania in one of the standout matches. That must fill, you know, someone like yourself and the rest of the roster full of pride and full of determination, because you can see it's there. It's all there.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people don't realize this, but when she got brought over the first time, it was only her really that got brought over. The other ones who did come over, like, you know, Amdars, Jack Gallagher's, yeah, Danny Burch, they'd all known us before they came over here. So she came over here as somebody who didn't know anybody. She'd maybe met Travis Banks once or twice, maybe when she was out in Australia, but she was coming over totally on her own. And then being told that she was going to come over here once a week, every 6 weeks, and have to fully submerge herself with us lots. And that's, again, she was, what, 18, 19? That's a real daunting task to say, hey, not only are we taking you, the only girl from NXT to come over to the UK, but we're also going to make you live there for a week every 6 weeks. And she meshed with us so well. And nobody has a bad word to say about Rhea Ripley. And again, as we said, to see her go from where she was to who she is now has been absolutely incredible. And again, does fill you with pride. And kind of, you can see what this brand is all about. And see, okay, we're kind of the stepping stones to get to WrestleMania.
But you talk about that, the stepping stone. How does it make someone like yourself feel to know that it's that close? The fact that, you know, you've seen Rhea, just 6 months ago, she was on our brand, just like the rest of, you know, you guys all are. It's so close to make that jump.
It's such a weird one, really, because if you think about it, you can always say there's exceptions. People can say that. So for a while, I'd say, like, when Pete Dunne moved to NXT, then we'd go, oh, you know, when he did the Royal Rumble, that's the big one. When he did the Royal Rumble, we're like, oh my God, this is our friend who we've seen. Or I've known Pete since he was 13, 14 years old. And we're like, okay, now there's a route. But then the argument could be made, well, Pete's the exception. He's the one in a million. And he's also exceptional. He's like, I honestly believe he's one of the best in the world. And I say that, even if I weren't mates with him, I would say he's one of the best in the world. And so you can make that exception saying, oh, you know, he's the one in a million. But then, and he's far ahead of some of us. But then, for example, we've just seen that the Grizzly Young Veterans have just made the jump to NXT. And me and Mark were there when they said they were making the jump. And we said, whoa, it's a little bit real now, isn't it? Because if you want, we dethroned the Grizzly Young Veterans for their tag team championships. And you've been there a number of times when we've had match after match with the vets, and they are an exceptional team, they are. But they're not too far ahead of me and Mandrews. They're not. So now it's like, okay, you're not just taking that one in a million. There are direct routes. And again, people like Jordan Devlin going over there and killing it. Travis Banks have been over there killing it. Walter's over there. And of course, me and Mark went over there and had what some people say was the match of the Dusty Rhodes Classic tournament as well. So again, it's showing that there is a direct route from NXT UK to NXT and, of course, the main roster.
What has this brand meant for you? Because from the outside, a few years ago, trying to get to WWE from the UK was tough, you know, and I think to make a full-time living of it over here was tricky. When NXT UK came about, what did that mean to someone like you?
So my first like kind of involvement with WWE was I was involved in one of the Cruiserweight Classic qualifying tournaments. So that was April 2016. And what should have been one of my career-defining moments that probably would have pushed me on ended up nearly becoming one of the worst days of my life. For people who don't know, I had that match, and 3 minutes in, I fractured my ankle. About 2 minutes after that, I refractured my ankle in second place. And then about 5 or 6 minutes after that, then I dislocated my shoulder where I tore my labrum and my rotator cuff. And being the idiot that I am, I carried on wrestling for another 6 minutes with all those injuries. And that put me on the shelf for 11 months. And in that time, everything changed. I think I said to you that when that first tournament rolled around, I was in the audience watching it. And when I was in the audience watching it, you can, if you ever see the clip, you can see me, my arm is like this. And the reason my arm's like this is it hadn't long come out of the sling. So it was just a habit of me continuing still being like that. So I was in a position where wrestling on the independents had nearly become a full-time living for me. And then it was all taken away. And I had to just kind of struggle. I couldn't even work in my regular job that I had at the time. So it was a real struggle for those 11 months. So for me, firstly, it was when this came around, it was security because I knew how difficult it had been for those 11 months. But also, it was also kind of felt like the end of a goal. Like that, I got hurt in a match that was put on for the WWE. That night when I got home and I was so deflated and upset, I had a mesh off William Regal. And the message said, first time you ever had contact with me, and he said, love your style, love your look. Heard you got hurt. Don't rush back. Make sure you get 100%. Let me know when you're all good. So for me, when I made my debut at the O2 for 205 Live, and it'd been nearly 2 years since that moment of me hurting myself, it felt like it was a full circle of, okay, I've worked from that moment that my shoulder came out and I had to have surgery and everything. I worked 2 years to get here. And I deserve to be here because I put in that hard work. Of course, little do I know that the moment you get there, that's when the real hard work really starts.
Before NXT UK came over here, how difficult or what was the challenge involved of someone like yourself getting to WWE, getting to, let's say, NXT or you know to that level? Was there a direct path or was it a challenge?
People used to say like, oh, what is the plan? WWE, and of course, when you first start wrestling, that's all you want. It's like, that's why I fell in love with wrestling. I fell in love with wrestling for WWE. And I guess the more you get into independent wrestling and the more you kind of learn about it, the further that dream feels. People used to say to me, will you end up in WWE? And I always used to say, yeah, I will. But then I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know if that meant I could potentially become a good name on the independents and hopefully I'd get an agent job backstage or maybe I'd be brought in for a guest seminar or I don't know, I maybe get to do some extra work at some point. I felt like I would get you, but I didn't know in what capacity that would be. So, yeah, I guess it felt completely like a pipe dream. I guess all you can hope for really is that you see all these other people from the independents, people I'd looked up to, again, people like AJ Styles and others, Samoa Joe, and you think to yourself, well, okay, as long as I try to do that path and that career, those same steps they did, then hopefully I can make the same. But again, I'm a small kid from a Welsh valley. It doesn't really seem like anything's. It doesn't seem like it's possible to move out and get to Cardiff, let alone kind of get to the WWE.
But let's talk about where you came from, because where you came from is one of the inspirations of why you're where you're at. So you've cited Adrian Street as one of your big influences, and you can see that in your style, in what you wear, and just how you act. And some people may not know, he comes from the same town you did. So just tell me what you saw in Adrian, and was he the reason you got into sports entertainment?
you're saying it. I get goosebumps. You're just saying it. But it's, I wouldn't say he's like the reason. It was like, it was definitely WWE. If I go right honest to why I got into it, somebody lent me SmackDown 2. I played as Scotty Doherty doing the worm on SmackDown 2. I was all in, Andy. I was all in. And I loved it. When I got to meet Scotty at the Performance Center, and I think me and Mark had just had like the match with Fabian and Marcel at Blackpool, and he came up to us and said, "Just watch your match the other day. It was great." Shook your hands like that, and I so wanted to say to him, "Used to play as you SmackDown 2. Love the worm. I really wanted to, but I just said thank you, of course." But for me, like again, started messing around, started kind of like playing wrestling with my friends. But then you start hearing like people who come past the gardens, and they'd be like, "Oh, wrestling is it? Wrestling's it, boys?" And they go, "Oh," some of the old people are like, "Oh, like Adrian Streets." And you'd kind of say to yourself, like, "Oh, I'd hear my granddad say that name," and you start asking questions, and then all of a sudden you hear then that at the age of 13, 14, you're like, "Oh, there was this guy who was a wrestler, and he's from the exact same town that I'm from. I wonder whatever happened to him." And then everyone's like, "He went to America." And then you start hearing about these stories about how he wrestled Macho Man and how he was like killing up on the territories. And you start to think to yourself, well, he must have been this monster, he must have been massive. And then when you start looking a little bit more into it, you're like, wait a second, he was shorter than I am. And yeah, he was built, but he wasn't huge. And then you start thinking, well, if this man can get out of the valleys in a time where it was so much harder to get out than it is for me now, then surely we've got to have a chance to do this. And I say we because, of course, like people might not know, but me and the Wild Boar Mike Hitchman started wrestling in his back garden. Like that's how I met him, first day in his back garden. Like 14 years old, and one of my favorite things is kind of the day we signed the contracts, looking around and going, "Mate, do you ever think we'd end up here when we started building rings in your back garden?" And he turns to me and he goes, "You need to shut your mouth before they realize we shouldn't be here."
How did you and Bourne meet?
I had a mate that I'm still very close with now. Like I'm very fortunate that I have a group of mates who I started wrestling with and backyarding with, and I still to this day we still do video chats. Now we're locked down, doing video chats every Thursday or whatever, and having it was my mate Dan who's the one who invited me. It was his birthday the other day, so we had a bit of a party on house party or whatever. But he knew I loved wrestling. He said to me, "Oh, I've got a friend who has a ring in his backyard." And I went, "Oh my god, a ring in his back! Oh my god, this is going to be amazing." So I went down expecting to see the PC. That's what I expected to see when I went down the back garden in my head. And when I got there was some carpet on the floor, there was four sticks in the ground, and there was hose pipe for ropes. I've never been more disappointed, Andy, in my life. But I went there and I absolutely loved it. It was like, of course, we weren't doing it to the extent we're doing it now, but yeah, that's how I started. And from there then we started kind of looking online, and luckily forums were a big thing in the early 2000s, so we found stuff online on how to make your own makeshift rings. And we went from messing around to him getting a video camera and him recording it. And we still have so much footage of us backyarding from the age of like 14 all the way up. And some of it's pretty good. Like there's some, like if you ever come down to the PC, sometimes you'll find Mark Andrews will find those back at wrestling videos. And he likes to put them on in the PC. He's like, you should see the look on Robbie Brookside's face when he walks through and sees what we're watching. But
I've seen some of them. I think you guys have put some of them out, and the stuff you guys were doing, like the agility that you've got, At that young age, where did you pick up that style? Did it come to you naturally? Was it something you were looking to do?
It was just, I guess, trial and error. There was like, of course, Bo was always bigger than us. Bo would always throw us around. That was what he did. I had another mate who was absolutely incredible high flyer. Like I have no doubt that if he decided he wouldn't want to go pro, he would have been absolutely killing it now. I'm talking, he used to be do standing shooting star presses and like ridiculous stuff. And it was always me trying to keep up with him. But of course, as we got older, he kind of like fell out of love with it and didn't want to do it as much. But it was something that always just kind of me and Bo always wanted to do. And there's another guy who's on the independents at the moment called Brendan White, calls himself the professional wrestling workhorse. And he was in the gardens with us too. So there's three of us at the moment that are me and Bo at the WWE and Brendan, who's currently killing it at Rev Pro and has wrestled some New Japan people too. So he's smashed it too, all from that small little garden. In
That's
the South
crazy. Quill. That's crazy. So were you guys completely self-taught?
Yeah, I guess the way that I always try to say, like Mike Bird, who wrestled at Cardiff for us for NXT UK, I always say like, okay, he was our trainer, but then Pete Dunne always liked to turn and say, no, you guys taught yourself. Mike Bird just kind of like softened the edges when you started going pro, and like Mike would have taught us how to run the ropes and how to move around and how to wrestle, like mat wrestling style. But everything else, yeah, it was just us lot kind of seeing. I can remember one of the days we watched TNA. We watched the X Cup, and it would be me and Bo wrestling, and my mate Dan would be by the patio watching X Cup. And the moment me and Bo had finished, it would be me then sat there watching X Cup and Bo and Dan wrestling, and we would just do a round robin for like 6 hours, just trying to copy everything we had just seen and recording it. And then we'd go back the next day or whatever, we'd watch it back and be like, okay, that didn't look like it should have been on TV. What about if we try this? And then over the course of the next 3 or 4 years, we were doing stuff that, to a point, I guess, you could say was semi-professional.
Mate, that's amazing. How's it feel to go from teaching yourself in Wild Boar's backyard on a carpet, essentially, to now today being singled out by someone like Edge as one of the standout superstars of NXT UK? I mean, Edge, one of the all-time greats, has picked you.
It's you say stuff like that, and like you're saying it, and again, it's that Goosebumps moment. I guess sometimes you have to really kind of step back, because it has been a 10-year journey to get to this moment. And that's not being, hey, I'm in the back garden, and the next day I'm at the Royal Albert Hall. It's not that. It's okay, now we're wrestling in front of 20 people in Newport. Okay, now we're wrestling in front of 100 people in Cardiff. Okay, now I'm in Italy, and I'm wrestling. Oh, it's only 80 people here in Italy. Okay, I thought it would have been bigger. Okay, now UK's doing a bit better. Now we're getting 300 people in. And now I'm getting flown to America, and I'm doing King of Trios. So it's literally just been like step by step by step. So by the time you get to that moment where you say, like, we won the championships in Cardiff or whatever, or Edge is like singling me out, as you said, it's because it's been step by step by step. Like, that step doesn't seem as far as like that step over there, because it's all been little by little. And I guess that all comes down to setting yourself goals and aspirations as you go along year by year. But yeah, for you to say that, it does seem absolutely mental. Sometimes, like, it's weird how normal it's been to be able to like walk up to Shawn Michaels and ask him for advice. Like, that's like, Shawn is my favorite of all time, like, hands down.
Was he your guy? Was Shawn your guy when you got into
it? Yeah, Shawn. It was him and Eddie. I get quite upset when I think to myself, I'll never get to meet Eddie Guerrero. Mm. And I like to pick like Robbie Brookside's brain, because Robbie's wrestled him a few times. And Robbie's like, he was outstanding, like incredible. And you speak to Regal about it, and he says, yeah, one of a kind. And I guess like Shawn and Eddie were my guys.
When was the first time you met Shawn Michaels face to face?
Royal Albert Hall. So we're at Royal Albert Hall, and I think I'd even met Triple H at this point, and that was Nad. Like, shook his hand, that was pretty cool and stuff like that. But then we're at Royal Albert Hall, and I walk into the room and into the venue, and he's down by the ring. And I saw some other people going up and shaking his hand, and I was like, right, okay, I'm going to go up and shake Shawn Michaels' hand. And then like kind of I start walking up, and I see him talking to somebody else, and I'd be like, okay, I'll leave him. And then I'll go to do it, and you see him walking in the other direction. Like, I don't want to be following Shawn Michaels, so I'll leave it. And I think like, okay, I'll meet him at some point today. So then I start speaking to Devlin, and because we're in the match first, so I'm talking to Devlin, and then all of a sudden there's a tap on the shoulder, and I turn around to Shawn Michaels, and he introduces himself, and then he goes, you doing the three dives tonight? And I go, three dives? He goes, yeah, through the bottom, through the middle, over the top. And I go, I don't know. He goes, oh, why, do you think I should? And he's like, I think it looks great. He's like, yeah, maybe you should do that tonight. And I go, yeah, okay, I'll add that in. And I walk off, and then I'm like, oh my God, not only am I talking to Shawn Michaels, but obviously because he's Shawn and he's one of the greatest, he's obviously done his research on this entire tournament, and he knows that that's what I do. And I was like, wow, that's absolutely amazing.
I remember that weekend, because Shawn was my guy. Hulk Hogan was the first ever wrestler I saw, so he's always got a real place in my heart. But when I really got into it, WrestleMania 12, the Iron Man match, that match changed my life. And since then, Shawn was my guy. And I remember the Royal Albert Hall, same weekend. And I got there, and he was the first person I saw when I walked in. When I was backstage, I saw Shawn Michaels. And I rarely lose my shit at anyone. I'm always like, oh, okay, cool. When I saw Shawn, I was like, oh my God, Shawn Michaels is here. And the same thing, all weekend. I'm in the ring doing, you know, rehearsals and stuff, and he's ringside. And I keep thinking, I need to just introduce myself to this guy. I can't go this entire weekend. This could be the last time I ever get to meet Shawn Michaels. And every time there was, you know, someone was talking to him, or it wasn't the right time. And I think we were there for 2 days. And I was like, oh, I can't leave here without introducing myself to Shawn Michaels. And as I was leaving the venue, our paths crossed backstage, and I was like, I've got to do it. So I stopped. I was like, hey, Shawn, I'm Andy. I'm the ring announcer. Just wanted to say, you know, thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you. I don't know if Shawn had any idea who I was. I'm pretty sure he didn't. You know, he would not have even seen my stuff at that point. And he's like, hey, man, yeah, great job tonight. And just that, even though I kind of probably knew he wouldn't have registered who I was, I just lost my shit in my head. I was like, oh, my God. And then, like, later down the line, to hear him when, you know, meetings or when we're prepping for stuff, when he actually said my name, and not just my name like the ring announcer or Andy, when he actually said, we'll get Andy Shepherd to do that, that was a realization that Shawn Michaels, my childhood hero, knows my name. And that, to me, was just everything, man.
There's a moment where, we're at Brentwood, and me and Mark had just lost the tag team championships, and we're backstage, and I think it was like we'd had the match at Cardiff, and the crowd at Brentwood were great that night, but I don't think anyone really expected the titles to change hands, and we came back and we were a little deflated because I think that we'd had that reaction that we had in Cardiff when we won the belts, and in our heads a little bit, we kind of wanted Gallus to have that reaction. Of course, for them to have that reaction, they would have to happen in Scotland, really. But a part of us wanted that to happen because, again, we're our brotherhood and we want everyone to kind of succeed and everyone have their moments. So it happened. The match was great. I've gone back and watched it. But because we didn't have that reaction, we came back and we were a little bit deflated for them. And Shawn thought that we were deflated because we'd lost the belts. So he came over and decided to just give us a pep talk and tell us how much he loved the match and told us like how much he was like he'd enjoyed Cardiff and all this stuff and told us. And we were trying to tell him, like, no, we're not sad because you've taken the belts off. We're not sad of that at all. But he was like telling us all this stuff and telling us like we've got ideas going forward for you. And I'll be honest with you, me and Mark were a team that they put together for the tournament because they need to make teams up. And we're a tag team that's done way better than I ever imagined. And we're a team now that's here to stay. And like kind of that's what he was telling us. Like, we didn't expect you guys to be as good as you were as a team. And you guys have got super over and we really want to push this and we want to push this forward. And as he's talking to me, I look up and I see Shawn Ryan, who's done them incredible videos for the takeovers. And I see that he has a camera in his hand. And I continue to talk to Shawn. And the moment the conversation's ended, we say, thanks, Shawn. It's amazing. Both me and Mark walk up to Shawn Ryan and be like, please tell us you got that. He's like, yep, I got two or three photos that you're going to absolutely love. And it was just that moment of thinking, like, I love that the fact that they're always there, constantly kind of grab stuff and try to, like, document it. Because moments like that, like, you're never going to be able to kind of, like, not say prove it, because, of course, we get to a point now where we are becoming more and more mates, friends with him, and we had a lovely conversation with him at Full Sail, like, the week we spent with him. Like, we did a whole week with him. We were, like, Blackpool, then Full Sail, then York, and we were, like, on the planes with him and stuff like that, and it was absolutely great. But it is cool that, like, again, in 50, 60 years or whatever, to have those photos to be like, hey, this is Shawn Michaels, the greatest of all time. This is him kind of giving us a pep talk after we lost our first WWE championships. Sometimes it's absolutely bizarre just to think where we are.
How was it to win those championships in Cardiff? And no doubt you had, you know, I hope family and friends there. How was it to become the first Welsh WWE champions?
I don't think people realize how roller coaster that entire build up was. Like, for anyone who didn't know the full story, like, so I dislocated my shoulder, as I said, in the Cruiserweight Classic qualifying tournament in 2016, got it repaired in 2016. We'd heard inklings that maybe there was going to be a Cardiff takeover. We'd heard little bits and pieces, but it hadn't been confirmed. And we were thinking, well, we've got pretty over as a team and we've got some good chemistry with the Grizzled Young Veterans. There could be a chance here that we could be in the tag match. And we didn't even think further than being in the tag match. And at the time, both me and Mark hadn't done a takeover, and for it to be in Cardiff, we're like, oh, okay, this would be great. They announced it, I do believe, the end of May, they announced it ready for August. It was kept pretty close to the chest, but maybe like the 10th of May that year, I re-dislocated my shoulder, and I re-tore my labrum in my right shoulder. So instantly, the conversation around me was, oh, okay, you might need to have surgery again. And then 3 or 4 weeks after having that conversation, they announced that they're doing TakeOver Cardiff. And I'm just like, oh man, I need to be better for this. And me and Mark were like, we need to be. And for us to be in that match, like, I needed to be cleared. And we worked out, like, how long, like, the WWE have protocols on different injuries. And it worked out that I would need to pass the tests and be cleared for them to do the build-up for it the week of the Plymouth tapings. Like, it was dead to that week. It was dead on. Like, if I'd gone into that room with them and I gave them any sort of inkling that my shoulder wasn't ready to wrestle, we wouldn't have done TakeOver Cardiff. So we had no way of knowing. And they'd already kind of started building up Gallus as the backup as well. That's how it became a triple threat. So, like, that, for one, it was a roller coaster emotionally because we didn't know if we were going to be in the match. And then, like, I remember having the match with Mark Coffey, and I remember rolling him up. And if you watch, there's a bit where me and Mark, after we've rolled him up, and I've won the first match, and Mark, of course, got to win the second match, but there's a look in both our eyes. And I think somebody said, like, you look so much happier, you two, after you get the first win than when Mark wins and we're officially in the match. And the reason being is because we knew that, like, I need to get through that match with that shoulder in place. And, like, Mark was going to do his thing. Mark was 100% going to knock out the park, but it was all down to whether that shoulder was going to stay in place in that Mark Coffey match. So, like, we got that and we did that. And then it was all about just trying to, that was like a 5 to 6 minute match. Then they were saying, okay, you've got like 35 minutes at Cardiff. So then I had to make sure that those 6 weeks going forward, that I had to make sure that not only was I 100%, but I was able to do a 35 minute match with all the bells and all the whistles. So yeah, it was just that build up to just being in the match was a roller coaster. And then, of course, then us not knowing whether we were going to win or if we were just going to be one of the matches that they wanted to kind of highlight that weekend was incredible. And again, Mark and me going into it, we were really excited, but I said, like, there was a chance in that match that I could have done a dive, shoulder could have come out, and then that would have been the dream over, really. So I said that Mark was really excited, like, oh, let's go out and kill this. And I was like, yeah, cool, man. But, like, in the back of my head, like, this could still not end the way we want it to end. And I remember lying on Gibson, getting draped across him by Mark, and I remember 1, 2, 3, and I remember just sighing, like, oh, my God. We pulled it off. We pulled it off. And Mark had said all week he was like, oh, I'm gonna cry in the ring. And he was gonna cry in the ring. And we didn't. We held it together. And there's that bit where we're in the crowd and we're absolutely. So it's like Eddie Guerrero, right? The moment I thought to myself, I want to be a professional wrestler, is when Eddie Guerrero won the WWE Championship from Brock Lesnar. That's the moment where I went, I want to be a professional wrestler. And it was Eddie in the crowd in his hometown, surrounded by his friends and family, with the WWE Championship. And the fact that when we won the championships, we got the call that we were allowed to go into the crowds, like that. If it did, I know it sounds silly because people always say this, but it did feel like a full circle moment of that's the moment I decided I wanted to become a wrestler, and now I'm getting able to do it in my hometown.
What felt better at the end of that match? Was it the fact you'd won the titles and become a WWE champion, become the first Welsh champions, or was it that you'd survived?
I don't know. I think it was, maybe it was everything. I think that the moment I walked out there and I was in the back of my head, it was like, this shoulder could come out. But that Mark's music hits and we came out and the crowd were absolutely losing their mind. And I remember standing in the crowd as the other people entered and they were all just chanting for us over the top of everybody else. And I remember thinking to myself, if it does come out, like, this is as good as it's going to get tonight, then I'm happy with this because this is absolutely incredible. Luckily for us, that wasn't the best. It was like it kept building and kept building and kept building, and yeah, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think there's the moment as well where I hit the 630 and I hook the leg and Gibson pulls the referee out, and you can feel the air get sucked out of the building. Everyone is like, that's it. That was it. They've built up to this one moment, perfect match, but we're not getting this tonight. It's not happening tonight. And I think we could have lost, and I think the crowd still would have gone relatively happy that night. But then the fact then that we do the one more turnaround, and then Mark hits the shooting star press, and you can like, I'm on top of Gibson. I can feel the whole crowd counting along with us.
Absolutely. I'm getting goosebumps. Just you, yeah, Rick, honestly. I mean, look, that your first takeover match was standout, and we'll go down in history. But hey, your second takeover match, takeover Blackpool 2, the ladder match is, I mean, look, when their history of NXT UK is being written, and it, you know, it already is, man, that match is going to be one of the standouts. How was that to participate in? Well, first of all, a first for the brand, so no doubt a lot of pressure, but also just pulling off such a match on such a platform.
Well, Blackpool for a start, isn't it? It's this, it's like coming back to that and being on the takeover after kind of the real moment where I was like in the crowd watching Mark do it the first time around at the tournament meant the absolute world. But there was moments where I would like turn to Mark throughout the day and be like, we're in a ladder match in the WWE. Like again, I'd be lying if I said like the reason like my style is the way it is isn't because of Jeff Hardy and the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys, because of those ladder matches. I was the kid in Wild Bull's back garden jumping off ladders. And because I saw that, and I know that Mark was exactly the same, so it was absolutely great. And that, again, the whole setup for the two tables and the ladder was like, right, we're gonna take what Jeff Hardy did and we're gonna do a 2020 version of this. And I remember like us kind of being a bit deflated when the first table broke, and then like kind of we start to climb, and then like Mark starts to climb with me. And there's, I don't know if people, like people go back and watch it. They need to go back and watch it. There's a moment where we get maybe halfway up and Mark goes, do you want, like, tell me when you're ready. He said, are you all good? And you can watch me put my hands under Mark's armpits and I drag him up another two steps. And then, so like we're up even, Mark was literally ready to go because he didn't know how much. And I get him up another two steps. And then Mark turns to me and he goes, okay, on your count. And I turn to him, I go, I've only got 1 foot on the ladder, mate. It's all on you. So if you watch it, my 1 foot's dangling over the side of the ladder and I just hold on to him and it's all Mark Andrews. Like, it's just like, I'm just going to push off with 1 foot. I'm going to push off. And it's a real funny, like, we do it and we came backstage and Trent Seven just went, you guys just reinvented wrestling. That's what he said to us. You went, you should reinvent wrestling. So it was that one or whatever. And then the other one was Johnny Moss is a stickler for, if you're going to do a flip bump, you've got to come off 1 foot. He's a stickler for it, right? And some of us, of course, like some people haven't been trained that way. Some people struggle with that. So he's a stickler for it. And Mossy obviously twigged that I'd come off 1 foot off that ladder. And he put his hand on my back and went, those one-legged foot flip bumps coming handy tonight, didn't they, mate? And I was laughing so much because I didn't even twig that either. That, yeah, I guess that when it all came down to it, the natural technique that's been built into me over the years of flipping off 1 foot is how we did it at Blackpool.
How did that match feel to be a part of a first?
It's one of those moments where you wanna do so well that it's really hard to kind of enjoy yourself on those weekends. I mean, especially in the build up, because you just want it to kind of, it's such a weird one with wrestling, especially at this level. You want it to be over so you can enjoy it. But like when you're, a lot of times now, and I don't know, you probably see me backstage, I'm a nervous wreck before nearly every match I have or whatever. I'm awful. I wasn't too bad at Blackpool. I don't know why, but like especially at Cardiff, I was an absolute mess. And it's not until the music hits and you're on your way to the ring that I can fully enjoy myself. And then everything that comes afterwards is fantastic. But the build-up is awful. So like to say like how was it that weekend? Like once we were in there and we were doing crazy stuff and we were getting the reactions, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. But the build-up to it, knowing that we had one of the most high profile, and again, coming out of Cardiff, who went in where people didn't think, like in the build up, people were like, oh, the match will be all right. And then end up being one of the standout matches the entire weekend. On a weekend which was full of wrestling, it was a standout match the entire weekend. So when we went into Blackpool, everyone's like, this match is going to be absolutely insane. And we're like, oh, don't put pressure on us now. Come on, what are you doing? But yeah, when we'd finished it, it was absolutely great. And of course, we did that ladder match, and then it was like, okay, now get on a flight and go do the Dusty Classic 2 days later. So what a weekend.
You talked about Trent there coming up to you after that match and saying you just reinvented wrestling. When I was growing up, I used to read all the books, all the autobiographies, and there's always this talk about, you know, the locker rooms and there's so much competition and backstabbing and so forth. And look, you know, I've been around this brand since the start, but you know, I'm not one of the boys. From where I sit, the NXT UK locker room is so supportive. Everyone wants everyone else to succeed. There's such a good vibe there. Does that feel like the case to you that they've, whoever's assembled this locker room has pulled together a very special group of individuals?
First off, I want to correct you and tell you that you are one of the boys. No matter what I was saying. seriously, mate, you really definitely 100% are.
Thank you, man.
But yeah, I think that the reason that British independent wrestling did so well and the reason that it became like the thing that everybody was watching is because of that brotherhood that everybody's kind of formed over the years. Nearly everybody on this roster has wrestled in front of five people for no money or traveled 6 hours to be told then that you're only going to get a Rumble spot. And it's because of everyone trying to improve together and get better and try to kind of have the best storylines they could or, you know, the best matches they could that the crowds got bigger. And we all realize that. And I think, again, you look at NXT in the States and the reason that anyone is able to become a star there is because of all the stuff that's been put in place before those people got there. So I think everyone here realizes that for this brand to succeed, everyone needs to succeed. And it's like the only thing that's going to make this must-see is if we have a roster full of must-see competitors. And that has to be in place as well, because as we said, Pete Dunne's moved now to NXT. The vets have now moved to NXT. Like, we need to make sure that it's not just must-see for now, it's must-see so when those people move on, it continues to build. And the way I want to look at it is, like, Jordan Devlin's now, like, he's must-see now, Jordan Devlin. But if you watch the first tournament, he wasn't must-see in the first tournament. I spoke to Jordan about this. He was very deflated after that first tournament and he was contemplating, like, quitting and stuff like that. So to see where Jordan's come from as somebody who was quite forgettable in that first tournament to become one of the people that people tune in every week to see now because he's absolutely incredible is absolutely amazing. And also the likes of, like, Noam Dar. Noam Dar has come home. He was given an option. He was told, like, okay, you can stay out there or you can come home and you can help to build this brand. And Noam's decided to move back home to Scotland because that's how much this means to him. He wants to continue to build a brand here in the UK. So I think, like, again, brotherhood and sisterhood, everything like that, it, like, the only way that this is going to get better is when we all continue to work together. And I think we know that. I think that's why the scene's got bigger and better. And I think that, again, it's just going to continue to get bigger and better from now on.
Does it feel to you guys like you are building something? Because, you know, I think first of all, I'm amazed how this thing's grown in the short amount of time it's been. When we had that first tournament, we all wanted something to be built. But then obviously there was that 18 months or so where not a lot happened. And I think a lot of people were thinking, okay, we'll have a title, but that might be kind of as big as it gets over here. And then obviously those Royal Albert Hall shows happened and then the brand began. And now here we are. I mean, the TV show's been on air for 18 months or so and kind of look where we are. And of course, we hope this continues to build and this is something which is here for many, 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 many years to come. Does it feel to you guys like you are building something?
Oh, definitely. It really does. Like, you've got to say that, A, we're on BT Sports now once a week, which is absolutely incredible. We're also on, like, the Paramount channel. And the one thing I always tell other people as well is, like, we're available to watch on the Channel 5 app.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like, I wouldn't have thought that 18 months ago when we started. But I think the big thing is other people from the outside looking in are instantly going to compare what we're doing to NXT. First and foremost, we've been doing this 18 months. They've been, what, 5 or 6 years now in the making, that brand? So we're a good 4 years behind they are. On top of that as well, like, we go and do about 1,000, we go do like 2,000 seat venues, and very rarely do we get in less than like 800, 900 people or whatever. Full Sail only holds about 200 people. And so it's like, you want to compare it. We are outdrawing Full Sail and what Full Sail has been doing for a while. We're outdrawing them by 4 times. Sometimes, like, we've gone places and we've drawn, like, you know, down a play of 2,000, 2,500 people. Up in Scotland, 2,000 people. So we're outdrawing nearly 10 times that amount than what Full Sail do. Also, as well, as I said, they've had 6 years to build this. And I think if you look at where they were as NXT started, you look at where they were 18 months into it, we're far, far further along than they were 18 months. So it's easy for people to kind of look at NXT and look at NXT UK and go, oh, yeah, but it's not NXT. It's like, yeah, but NXT wasn't NXT like 4 years ago. Like, we are building. Every show gets better. Like, every takeover gets bigger. And now, again, we're on Paramount and we're on the Channel 5 app and we're on BT Sports. And I have no doubt, especially now, given this current climate where a lot of people are now having to stay in and they are just going to have to be, like, digesting what's put on TV. Like, I think sky's really is the limit for this brand.
Yeah, I love the fact we're on all these different platforms now. I don't think any of us even realized this was going to happen, because I remember I was on holiday at New Year and just saw something online and it was like, oh yeah, now WWE, now NXT UK is going to be part of the BT setup. And then very quickly the Channel 5 things happened. So it's all happened so quickly. And now, as you say, no one's got any reason to not be able to see our brand. Everyone in this country has access to the Five On Demand app. So it's crazy to think that the access and the eyes this brand has on it. How do you think, as someone who really is ingrained into the industry, how has NXT UK affected kind of just the industry as a whole over here? Do you think it's made more opportunities for people? How are the indies doing in terms of shows?
It's, again, anyone from the outside looking in, like, there was a big stir a couple months ago where they were touring and saying, like, NXT UK has killed British independent wrestling. And again, I understand, like, I get it, I really do. There are fans over here that have dedicated their time and their passion to this for the last 3 or 4 years. And they've seen the likes of Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, myself, Mark Andrews, Zach Gibson, Jordan Devlin. They've seen them grow. And almost like, it's almost like your favorite band. You see your favorite band kind of like getting bigger and they're your band and you love them. And then, of course, a lot of people see the bands become like more mainstream and then all of a sudden they don't like them as much. And I get it. It's like, if you love something that much, the fear of something being taken away from you is great. It really is. But I said, I still attend a lot of British independent wrestling shows. I still go to Fight Club, which is like 45 minutes from my house. I still travel down to Attack shows. And Attack Pro Wrestling are still selling out the Bingo Hall. Attack Pro Wrestling are still selling out the Trinity Hall. Fight Club Pro are absolutely rammed, packed when they do those weekends. Like myself and the Wild Boar, we just took over Pro Wrestling Chaos. And the reason we took that over, like that was a flourishing, absolutely flourishing scene. Those three decided to step away because their outside lives were kind of getting too hectic and they couldn't continue doing it. Like, we've taken it over. And up until we got, up until everything got shut down over here, our first show was on the verge of selling out. And it's, again, every show I go to is either sold out or on the verge of selling out. And it seems that the new people coming through now, like there's like people like your Connor Mills, which you're going to be hearing about and stuff like that over the next couple of years. Like I said, Brendan White's in that list as well. He's absolutely smashing it. Kyle Fletcher. There's so many other people up and down this country that are absolutely killing it and are going to continue to kill it. And I think the only thing that's going to stop this scene from growing is the fans. If the fans decide that, okay, it's dead and we're not going to go anymore, then there's nothing we can do about that. That's on them. But there's still great wrestling here. There's still shows being sold up and sold out up and down the country. So again, if they really are as passionate about this as I know they are, this scene can't die because they're the life force behind it.
Yeah, I mean, and just in a logical sense, it seems like, hey, now people all across the world and, you know, really in this country, everyone can see NXT UK. Everyone can see the fruits that have been grown by this UK indie scene. And if you like that, then hey, go and see your indie shows. Because, yeah, look, you know, hey, Pete Dunne might be on NXT now. You guys on NXT UK, cool. But who's the next Flash Morgan Webster? Who's the next Pete Dunne? If you go to your local Attack show, whatever show it is, however big or small, that is truly where you're going to see the next generation. And it could be 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, but a lot of the talent you're going to see on those shows will no doubt make their way into NXT UK, NXT, Raw, SmackDown. So yeah, I mean, you would hope that if people can get exposed to, say, our product, it will give them a taste for what's going on here and, you know, go down to your town hall or wherever that local wrestling is and go and see that next generation who you'll soon be seeing on TV.
Well, people say as well, like, it always trickles down from the top, and I honestly believe that. I know for a fact that when WWF was doing fantastic, like, the houses over here were absolutely incredible. When kind of WWE hit that little bit of a slump for a while, houses over here dwindled a little bit. But then you also got to look at it this way. We had, British wrestling had the biggest boom it's ever had, right, from 2016 onwards, right? It was like 2016 was that year, right? And that comes down from the fact that in that year, we got exposed with the Cruiserweight Classic. And then through that entire year, 2017 and stuff like that, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate absolutely stole the show at the Royal at the Blackpool Empress Ballroom. And then everyone went, who are these kids? Who are these people who were actually world-class already? And then, of course, they went over and did Takeover Chicago and had Match of the Year. And then Houses Over Here got even bigger. People forget that, like, this scene blew up because of the WWE United Kingdom tournaments. And then for 2 to 3 years after WWE signed these people and allowed the likes of James Drake to really invest in himself and become as good as he has, Gibson was signed a couple months after that and was able to really invest in what he does and open up a school and stuff like that. Pete and Tyler were able to quit their jobs and become full-time professional wrestlers because of that. But then WWE didn't just say, oh, okay, we've signed all these people, you can't wrestle anymore. They literally shone a spotlight on and then allowed them to be loaned out to everywhere on the British independent wrestling scene. And that is when the boom really happened. Like, without that UK tournament, this boom wouldn't exist. So you can't really kind of say, oh, you're taking people away. Like, you wouldn't have had the boom in the first place if it wasn't for that tournament. So it's like, yeah, I get why people are worried, but like, we have this because of that. And we were able to get as good because of your support as fans. So it's like, if you really love this, continue to support it.
And the fans are such a thing. I think that's, along with the work that you guys do inside that squared circle, the fans are something that make this brand so special. You know, everywhere we go. And this is why I think, you know, when I go to the States and I talk to fans out there, they love the interaction that the people who come to our shows have. They love the cheers, the chants. You know, every time I've gotten to the ring, I've nearly cried with anxiety. And that's something that is so special. And this brand has been made because of the fans.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the whole scene's been made because of the fans. It really has. As I said, like, I was able to make a full-time living before I got to NXT UK. And I was only able to do that because there were shows up and down the country that were sold out every weekend. And on top of that, I could put a t-shirt out on sale and hundreds of people would buy their t-shirt. So that allowed me then to kind of live my dream before I even was able to get to WWE. So again, the fans, they don't just make NXT UK, they make the entire scene, they make wrestling in general.
If 12-year-old Flash Morgan Webster was looking at you now, what would he think?
First off, he'd probably say, why are you not called Napalm? Because that was my name in the backyard.
What? Would say that.
Man, it makes no sense. I was the bomb. I was the bomb.
I'm calling my firstborn child Napalm. That is please, the best thing.
I watched the film Evolution. I called myself something before that. I might call myself something like the Jackal before that. And then I wanted to change my name. And I think I was watching the film. Yeah, I watched the film Evolution. The one about the aliens. And he was like, and he goes, send in the napalm. And I was like, what a cool name, I'm going to use that. So first off, he'd be like, why are you called Flash Morgan Webster? That makes no sense. but I don't know. I think he probably wouldn't believe. He wouldn't believe what's going on. Like I said, we have those conversations with Shawn Michaels. He said the thing about Edge. This to me is one of his favorites to watch or whatever in the brand. It's real mental. Sometimes I think I tell my mum these stories and I don't think my mum is quite able to kind of comprehend it. She just said, oh, that's nice. And I think it's because she doesn't really kind of fathom how big it is and stuff like that. But yeah, I guess he would just be completely gobsmacked, especially when at 12, I think I met Walbo, I think at and all that, maybe at 13 or 14. So at this point, I had just kind of discovered wrestling and loved it. I was probably on breaking my mum's bed with my brother or something, doing moves and power bombs. So I think at this point they'd be like, how did you achieve all this? Because it seems so far away and nobody ever leaves Brumau. Everyone stays there and gets jobs they don't want, to buy things they don't need, to forget about the things that they chose. But I guess it would just be him going, how have you achieved all this? And I honestly guess I would say it's just because when I started wrestling, I surrounded myself with a real good group of guys who all had the same dream and we all put the hard work in and have grafted and have made this a reality.
If there's kids out there, or adults, it doesn't matter. If there's other people out there who are thinking, I want to do what you're doing, is there any advice, are there any lessons you've learned over the last 10, 15 years that you think are invaluable to trying to get to the position you want to be?
It's a very different place to what it was 10 years ago. Like, the scene's completely different, which is great because it means now that it's more accessible than ever. There's more schools that are fully equipped. Again, if you're like me and you're from South Wales, like Wild Boar and Mark Andrews have a school down in South Wales now, Dragon Pro Wrestling School. So look them up online and drop them a message. I drop in occasionally as well and do lessons and stuff like that. So again, you've now got schools that have WWE superstars teaching you week in and week out. So it's more accessible than ever. I guess if I was to go back and kind of give myself more advice, the advice would probably be get in the gym sooner. Like, for me, the game has changed a little bit. You don't have to be the size of Ultimate Warrior anymore. You just need to look like a competitor. But it does always help. Somebody once said to me once that people make their mind up on you from the moment they see you when you walk through the curtain. And you either then have got to work twice as hard to try to shatter that perception if it's a bad one, or you can kind of work at the pace you can, and you've got their backing because they already accept you. And I think that a part of that is done by the way that you look. You don't have to be huge, but you do need to look like an athlete. And I'm somebody who is naturally, if I stopped going to the gym now, I would just revert back to my tiny self. But my advice would probably be that get in the gym sooner. Maybe you can kind of beat your metabolism a little bit, kind of maybe force your body to get a little bit bigger. That would be the only advice I got, because I guess the scene's changed. The platform now is absolutely incredible. And if you really want to do this, if this is something where you wake up every day and you just think about wrestling like I do, and you imagine yourself doing it, then go find a school. Like, it's easy to find a school now that has people. You've got, like, Wolfgang now go to schools and they lend hands up there with the schools up in Scotland. You've got, like, the Vets used to own a school in Liverpool. You've got us down in Wales. You've got Knuckle Locks, where Eddie Dennis teaches once a week down in London. Like, really, there's no better chance to become a professional wrestler in Britain than there is now.
Talking about how you look, I hope Nigel McGuinness sees this, because he's always questioned whether you could grow a mustache or not. And right now, I think this is 2 weeks.
I think I'm doing quite well for 2 weeks.
Mate, it's looking good. Great. I like it.
Hey, it's a bit. That's my granddad. Bit ginger. I said to Mark, like, hey, by the time we come back, we're going to do the old Bella twin spot. By the time we come back, we're going to grow that beard out, shave the A on the sides, get those abs going.
Hey, but also, if people have listened to this and they like listening to you, which I'm sure they have, you've got your own podcast.
I do indeed. So that's Morgan Webster's Wrestling Friends. It has NXT UK people on it. It has independent wrestling people on it as well. It's not just wrestlers. So I've had, like, referees come on in the past. I've had the likes of, like, Jim Smallman, who now works backstage, used to own Progress Wrestling. So it's a big variety. And I was going to say as well, I definitely want to get you on there as well, Andy. Like,
let's do it, brother.
I would love to do that. So yeah, if anyone out there is looking for, let's say we use the gateway again, if you like NXT UK, but you want to know a little bit more about the British independent wrestling scene, I guess I'm your guy. I kind of will give you an insight. And I also have a lot of people, Pete Dunne, Mark Andrews, Tyler Bate, they've all been on there. So definitely go back and look at the back catalogue.
Yeah, you got up to 90 plus episodes?
I got episode 99 is coming out tomorrow. On Wednesday, so and then I've got episode 100. I've been sending out some real wild requests to some people to try to get episode 100. I don't know if it's going to happen because some people are busy. It might just end up being me talking to myself for an hour. But yeah, episode 100 should drop in about 10 to 14 days time.
Mate, I listened to it. Yeah, as you say, if you're interested in British wrestling, some of the people that you've had on that podcast are standouts. It's a great sort of history marker. Some great conversations of people in this industry.
Yeah, even just stuff like Drake Maverick, for example. I had Drake on there as himself. He then, of course, in between his lapse between TNA and WWE, he was in a lull period where he didn't do it, and he reinvented himself as Spud 2000. So I had him on as a character one of that. So if you love the stuff that Drake Maverick's doing, definitely go back and check that. I've had Pete Dunne on there. I've had Tyler Bate on there. I've had Tegan Knox on there. I've had people who have gone on to become mainstays on NXT and stuff like that. Like, there'll be some people, like, my advice is come in and listen to the people you know, and hopefully stick around for the people you don't know.
mate. Well, look, it's been lovely chatting to you. First of all, great to see your face. Great to hear your voice in this unique times. But thank you, man. Thank you for your time, and good to see you doing so well. And I think, like the rest of us, can't wait to see you back in the ring when this all passes.
Itching, absolutely itching to get back in that ring. I watched that Edge documentary the other day.
Yeah.
And the bit where he's in there, with Dash Wilder wrestling around. I think I've never wanted to wrestle more in my life. It's like I know people say when you're watching other wrestling, you can kind of get lost in that. But there's nothing like kind of getting in the ring with your mates and just playing around and kind of going through everything and kind of like messing around with new stuff. That's the real magic of it, is kind of coming up with stuff outside the crowd and stuff like that, and then being able to put it in front of them. So yeah, I'm itching to get back in the ring.
Well, mate,
I might have to go build. I'm gonna get the sticks and get the carpet out, and I'm gonna go build one in the back garden.
Mate, get back in Boar's garden. Get training. Flash Morgan Webster, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Andy. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Flash Morgan Webster. It was great for me just. Well, first of all, to talk to Flash. I often get to talk to him at NXT UK, but actually to have an hour just shooting the proverbial shit with him was a real pleasure. Also, in these isolation lockdown times, it's nice to have that kind of social interaction. So, hey, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed it. Remember, like, subscribe to People I Want to Be Friends With to make sure you never miss an episode. Leave a rating and review, because it all helps the cause. But thank you. I look forward to being in your ears once again, very soon. Thanks, stay safe, and goodbye for now.